I'm George Oriello from the Global History and Culture Centre at the University of Warwick, and I'm here today with Professor Soraya Farocki from Bilgi University in Istanbul. Bilgi University is a partner in the Global Commodities Network funded by the Arts and Humanities Research Council, and this is a podcast of the Knowledge Centre of the University of Warwick. Soraya, we are here in front of two very interesting Ottoman objects. I believe there are two dishes, two plates, and they are Isnik ware. Can you tell us something about this object?
Yes. As you can see, both of them are plates, and they are part of a fairly large repertoire of, well, what you might call dinnerware, tableware. Only presumably most people who were lucky enough to own them, because they were quite expensive, probably used them for display as much as for actual use. However, they were by no means limited to the palace or to the very highest echelons of the elite, because excavations have shown, for instance, fragments of such pieces in a rural landholding wealthy person of the 17th century, and there were fragments of such dishes when this area was excavated in what's today Greece. So obviously a rich landholder could afford such pieces. The Hungarians, who have probably done the most thorough excavation of any Ottoman province, have found that they were, again, accessible only to the upper crust, but a provincial upper crust. So pieces were found in what used to be the royal palace, which was the fortress where there were high-ranking Ottoman officers. But in provincial Hungarian towns, again, such fragments have been found, not in huge quantities, but, I mean, they do indicate that these pieces were accessible. What's more, there are a few pieces with coats of armor belonging to non-identified European aristocratic families, which means, again, that they could be made to order. The most interesting example is, again, in Hungary. It was a pavilion belonging to a Transylvanian nobleman and his wife. And around 1600, they wanted something in the Isnik style, but they did not want the conventional flowers that we will see in a minute. Rather, they selected pieces out of a European herbarium, and then they had these things made up. Ultimately, the pavilion collapsed. It would take too long to explain why. And in the early 2000s, the Hungarians restored it and put the fragments that they were able to locate back in place. And then they had these pieces chemically examined, and surprise, surprise, we had always all thought that this all came from Isnik, but the chemist said, no way, it could have come from Isnik, maybe from Istanbul, which is puzzling because, yes, we know of kilns in Istanbul in the 18th century, but around 1600, that's kind of strange. So it's presumably the manufacture was more widespread than we would believe at first sight. There was another area where things of that sort were manufactured, and that is northern Syria and southeastern Anatolia. There's a certain kind of purple that is often associated with Damascus ware. I'm not sure to what extent that's correct. There are definitely pieces from this area where Turkish and Arabic mingle, because the museum in Hanover, New Hampshire, has a wall decoration with an inscription in Turkish and in Arabic. Mm. And they, again, I mean, the curators think that it comes from that area, Diyarbakir, or maybe northern Syria. So, what we have here, I mean, the Victoria and Albert Museum's catalog descriptions say that there was, you know, that the ideas came largely from China, and that is true for the blue and white dish that you see.
When you say the ideas came from China, it's mostly the decoration, I suppose.
Yes, because no true porcelain was made outside of China before the 1720s. So what the early Isnik ware used a kind of reddish clay, which didn't allow you to get a really white background. Mm-hmm. So in Isnik, they have quite a few of those. They have the wasters, because some of the kilns have been excavated, uh-huh. and the broken pieces, or sometimes pieces that apparently they weren't able to sell. I mean, probably they were commissioned and then the owner went bankrupt, something like that, or the person who had commissioned this thing. We don't know, but the Isnik Museum has acquired a fairly large set of such pieces, and most of them have something wrong with them. So
the second best.
Yes. I mean, I remember the Museum of Isnik as it was in the early 60s, and most of these things were not there. They have come out of the excavations of Oktay Aslanapa and his crew.
So Isnik develops as an area in the 16th century as an area of production, as something that in a sense imitates what porcelain can do in terms of lusterware. Yeah. But it's a very different product because it's not porcelain, it's fired at a different temperature, and it also imitates the blue and white clearly, but we see in the example on the right that is actually quite different. It starts having different kind of decoration.
Well, if you look at the rim, you will again see a Chinese motif. Because look at compare the two rims, please. Mm-hmm. And you will see these little circles. Apparently that is part of the Chinese repertoire. And then on the left-hand one, the grape dish, you also have these the thing that's called Chinese cloud bands.
Wonderful.
So the rim is somewhat Chinese inspired, but you are right, the Ottomans of the mid-16th century came up with a decoration that is not Chinese, and it's not Iranian either. It's a new creation. And it's based on flowers that can be recognized. So if you look at this one, you will see tulips and you will see carnations. Those are favorites. You will also see that the tulips are long and pointed. And that's what an Ottoman elegant tulip is supposed to be like, as opposed to the Dutch variety, which is kind of round and feathery and certainly has no sharp points at the edges. At present, in spring, in April, when the tulips are out, you can see both varieties in Istanbul, because the city of Istanbul plants millions of tulip bulbs mm-hmm. every year. In fact, there is a special park which is called the Park of Plants That Come Out of Onions. And I presume that that's where they cultivate the onions, and then they are set in all the parks of Istanbul. So, I mean, today both varieties exist. In addition, also part of this more naturalistic repertoire are hyacinths, which I don't think occur in Chinese or Iranian decorations. Mm. And then something else that does come from China, namely plum blossoms. And plum blossoms, I guess, in Chinese lore, are symbols of hardiness because they come out when it is still quite cold. So the typical arrangement of classical Ottoman dishes will be some kind of bouquet that shows these flowers. Sometimes they also have peonies, but that again is something presumably that came from China.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, Soraya, the other one, the one on the left, because if I had seen it without knowing what it is, I could have mistaken it for something European, because it has the grapes and the little scrolls, and it could have been a classic European 18th century or 17th century. What does make it Ottoman?
Well, I mean, it's a very close imitation of the Chinese original, because the Topkapi Palace has a piece, a porcelain plate, which is marked as original Chinese. Mm. And then they put this variant, is quite common. The Topkapi Palace also has one. And when I saw them last, the two were put next to one another. And it was shown that in this case, the Ottoman decorators followed the Chinese example quite closely. I mean, visibly they didn't do it in the right one. There's still a remnant in the rim, but the center design is quite different. Mm-hmm. But they did produce variations in color, because there is the Sadbekane Museum, which has a fairly large collection of Isnik work, tile work, and pots. And there you can see a very similar plate, but the grapes are green. Makes sense. Grapes are green.
Green, yes.
So you can see that they didn't feel obliged to stick with the Chinese model. And I think the reason why it looks so European is because, well, blue and white was imitated everywhere. Apparently, originally, some of the elements of blue and white, if I read Yoland Crow correctly, were really devised in Iran, and then migrated to China, where, while in Iran they could only make faience, but in China they did it on porcelain. And then the Ottoman sultans were great collectors, both of the Chinese originals and of the Iranian imitations. And then, presumably, the designers in the Nakashane were given these things and told to come up with something on the basis of that, because apparently they did have an office where people designed pieces. It's a disputed issue to what extent producers actually were told to use these designs, because Michael Rogers has suggested that it's also possible that some of these designs simply became so fashionable that people wanted them, and they were imitated without the Sultan having to order them. Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, all of this remains quite unknown, because we have very few written documents on all of this. Evliya Çelebi saw the place when production had more or less declined to the point of nothingness, so he didn't have much to say. And Michael Rogers once spent months going through the Ottoman archives trying to find documents. He found very few. And I remember he gave a paper, and in the discussion, everybody sort of felt that, you know, he had put in all this work. And, well, you know, the documents just weren't there to find. And, you know, so therefore, a lot of the dynamics are kind of hypothetical.
So, Raya, to conclude, can you tell us something about the use of these dishes, their size, and how they would have been used in a domestic context?
Well, as I say, I think quite a few of them were for display. And you see them, for instance, in miniatures showing palatial scenes There you see them being used for food, but then these occasions are often festive. And you also see jugs that are used as flower vases. So, you know, that way of using jugs is not limited to our own time. People did that in the 16th century. There's some very handsome miniatures showing these blue and whites being used as flower vases. So my suspicion is that they were used maybe for great occasions, you know, when the palace regaled visitors. Yes, then you see them. People didn't have individual plates, so you will find a bowl or a plate with, let's say, you know, rice or meat or whatever, and people had spoons, and they would, you know, take their food from the dish. It was considered quite impolite to disturb your neighbor when you were doing that. In fact, dervishes encouraged people to use the long-handled spoon to feed the person across from you. So, again, so as to not bother anybody. So, otherwise, I mean, in more ordinary venues, there were ways of having somewhat elaborate tableware, because the collection in Ambras has a couple, you know, they collected things, the owner, Duke Ferdinand, and probably his wife, who was from the banking family of Welser, and they have Ottoman tableware made of wood. It's very charmingly painted, and since these were collector's items, never used, they're still in very good condition. The museum has published them. So I presume that, you know, for everyday eating, maybe something like that was used rather than the expensive isnikware. And then, I mean, yes, we have miniatures where we can see especially blue and whites. And since they are shown on miniatures quite frequently, again, I presume that the display factor was important.
Thank you so much for this fascinating story of design transfer, of input substitution, and of course of creation of specific ways of conviviality and display. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome.